all teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's a sad day for the Houston Astros.
Oh, is it?
Brooks Raley has signed with the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yes!
Brooks Raley, Daily Raley, gone. No longer a Houston Astro. I'm heartbroken. I'm devastated.
You are? I'm not.
What's this?
This is if you don't know, Jeremy, let me just take a good line from our man on Channel 2.
Which
if
man?
You don't know, Ari Alexander uses this one all the time. If you don't know, now you know. I've been preaching forever and a day. The security blanket of Dusty Baker annoyed the hell out of me. Yeah, he came back late in the year to be okay. I'm totally fine with Brooks Raley going elsewhere because you know what? The Astros made him into a major league pitcher again. And if someone else wants to spend the money to take your Daily Raley fun out of my life, I'm here for it.
How are you ever going to replace that 4.78 ERA that Brooks Raley
gave
you? And that
was saying something when it was in the double-digit range in the midway point in the year. He was up at 10.
He was great in the second half of the season. He was outstanding. Yeah. Brooks Raley signing with the Tampa Bay Rays. The era of Daily Raley is done for the Houston Astros. Mm. Now, the Astros were active in free agency over the weekend, and I'm sure you noticed this. Kendall Graveman last week signing with the Chicago White Sox, $24 million deal, 3 years. The Astros, though, made a splash in free agency. They signed Hector Neris from the Philadelphia Phillies, $17 million, 2 years. So they actually give Neris slightly more per year, $8.5 million, as opposed to the Graveman, $8 million. The difference here, obviously, is Graveman the third year, Hector Neris given the two-year contract, so one less year. How you feeling about this move for the Houston Astros?
It was befuddling to me simply because of the Graveman issue to me was the guy that I wanted to see come back. I liked his stuff. I liked the fact that he could be effective against lefties and righties. I liked the fact that not a reliever for his whole career by any stretch, but he fit in nicely with this team. He found his niche. He was a good setup man. So I don't know as much about Neris. So I'm hoping that a guy that's been in the pen his whole career is a guy that's going to be a step above in terms of being in those high leverage situations and doing what Graveman did for a very small sample size with the Mariners and the Astros. But if the money's the same, Graveman sung the praises of the Astros organization, loved the clubhouse from day one and the family atmosphere, and he loved being around the team. So to me, there had to be something really, really deal-breaking, and maybe it was that third year, whether it was him or his agent, that just said, we got to have that, and click coming back saying, and I can't do it.
I'm with you that the third year is probably the biggest red flag. I also don't think that the Astros love the bounce-back ability of Kendall Graveman. Like, the fact that he really couldn't go back-to-back days, the fact that he would throw 25 pitches one day, and you're always kind of wondering if he could go that second or third day, too. I don't think that they love the fact that Graveman just wasn't that reliable arm in the bullpen that you could go to a lot. Like, he appeared in 53 games last year, which, I mean, he was very good in those 53 games, right around a 1.75 ERA. But 53 games for a go-to reliever is not a ton. Hector Neris, on the other hand, threw 74 games last year for Philadelphia. He's been a reliever his whole life. He's used to the role. And also, I think the Astros are fearful a little bit of what Kendall Graveman will be going forward. Like, the fact that he has had arm trouble in the past, the fact that he was a first-year reliever, is he going to continue to be very good in the bullpen going forward for the next three seasons? And they didn't have to give him that third year where they give Neris, who they know is kind of like a little bit more of a known commodity, that they give him one less year. Also, like this move very much reads like a James Click move. James Click loves to forecast what a player is going to be. I'll use Yuli Gurriel as an example. Yuli Gurriel, whenever he was signed to the contract extension late 2 years ago, he was having an awful 2020. Whenever the Astros gave him the contract extension, we're like, what are the Astros doing here? Why are they bringing back Yuli? He looks washed. He looks done. But if you looked at the advanced numbers and the expected numbers, he was actually a lot better than what he was producing on the field. This is the same thing. Like, if you want to go expanded projected numbers, and I try not to get too nerdy and dorky on the radio, but Graveman's expected numbers are actually far worse than his real numbers, which lets you know that he was probably a little bit lucky this past season. Neris is the opposite, where his real numbers are not quite as good as what his expected numbers were to be. So this, to me, is James Click getting 1 year less, which he doesn't like to go long-term, especially with relievers, and he's projecting that Norris in the future is going to be better than Kendall Graveman.
So you're saying he's clickbait?
Sure.
because here's the thing. I think the point you bring up, in a lot of ways, I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on TV or stay at Holiday Inn Select, but I think that knowing pitching and having pitched a lot in my life, just to know what it's like, your arm starts to go when you can't go back-to-back, when you can't do the things that you brought up, the things that we talked about during the season. Like, understand if you're a starting pitcher. If you're Jake Odorizzi, and we keep harping on the fact that between him and Christian Javier not getting, like, the routine you have to change to be able to be a relief pitcher and how quickly you have to be able to get ready, get up, get ready to go, and bounce back the next day in order to really truly be a relief pitcher, that says something. And then if you can't do it, and there are signs that said he couldn't do it, that's also the indication that maybe the arm and all the things in the internal workings of that arm aren't exactly what they should be. So maybe that's another thing that gave a little bit of hesitation to James Click. For whatever the reason, I'm not going to doubt James Click. I think that, you know, I believe that he saw what we saw in terms of Graveman, but I believe he also had a dollar figure in his mind and a term. And if Graveman and his agent thought that there was going to be a little bit more to that, and they wanted that, and the Astros couldn't do that, he went out and found a replacement. That's all I care about. If you're going to lose a guy, make sure you replace the guy, right? Because we're still wondering about the Correa situation, and if Correa goes, the biggest thing is going to be, can you replace a guy like that, or how do you replace a guy like that? The fact that Graveman left and you found a way to replace him, I'm fine with that. So, and I think that you bring up a great point in terms of what factors in. He wasn't able to bounce back quickly. He wasn't a true relief pitcher from that standpoint, if for no other reason. I'm good with what they did.
I'm good with what they did, too. It might not be sexy. It might not be popular, but I'm fine with it. Now, I do want another relief pitcher, and I'm worried that the Astros are done here, that they're not going to continue to add to the bullpen. Like, Andrew Chafin is a guy that I still love because you just lost your lefty. You just lost your lefty specialist in Brooks Everyday Rayleigh. Chafin's a guy who can get lefties and righties out, so you're not as worried about
price
him facing righties.
Big, though.
I'm curious about the price tag. Can you get him on a $17 million two-year deal? I think that you might. Colin McHugh's still out there,
that's
too.
That's the one. Because here's the thing I was going to say to you. Where did Rayleigh go?
He went to Tampa.
Okay, so if he's going to Tampa, maybe Tampa doesn't need Colin McHugh, even though Colin McHugh's not left-handed. Colin McHugh has proven out of the bullpen he can go long, he can go short, he can get both guys, both sides of the plate out. His wife loves it here. They've made indications about the fact when they brought Marwin back, she almost hinted around that they'd love to come back too. I told you before that we got to the playoffs, I'm like, there's a guy for next year to be a perfect fit in this bullpen. If they could find a way to get Colin McHugh back, I think they would do them really well.
I would love McHugh too. He was on my wish list at the start of free agency as my righty reliever that they signed. Now they brought in Norris, who is a righty, so maybe that eliminates the idea of that. But maybe if they don't bring back a lefty, McHugh is an option. I don't need them to break the bank on like a Raisel Iglesias. Like, I think he has a compensation. He turned down the qualifying offer. So if you sign Iglesias, you have to lose a draft pick for signing him. I'm not interested in that. I'm not looking to break the bank. I want another $15 to $18 million deal for 2 years for another reliever. That's what I'm looking for. And if that's all you do in the offseason, I'm fine. I am worried, though, that the Astros are done in the bullpen because I still think they do need help there. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I got a text asking us about, I think it's Seiya Suzuki, who's coming from Japan. Probably the best center fielder on the market now that Starling Marte has signed with the Mets. For sure. In terms of length, there's no doubt about it. The Mets going nuts in free agency. More on that later. I don't know a ton about Suzuki, to be honest with you. I know that he's 27 years old. I know that Jeff Luhnow was a lot more interested in like exports from Japan than what I've seen from James Click now, although James Click really hasn't had an opportunity to do that. I've also seen the projections on Suzuki be somewhere between like $50 to $60 million for 5 years. To me, that's too much for what you don't really know what you're getting. Like, Suzuki's not going to be Shohei Ohtani. We know that. Yeah. His numbers in Japan were good. I just don't know what he's going to be. That seems like a lot of risk there. Jeff Luhnow, I think, would be willing to take on that risk. He was a little bit more risky than James Click is. I don't think James Click really has Suzuki anywhere on his free agency board. I don't see this happening at all for the Astros.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think that, again, they still have they have the biggest issue still out there that they have to resolve, which is shortstop. And they know that regardless of which way they turn, it's going to cost them money. And especially if you're going to try and retain Carlos Correa, it's going to cost you a boatload of money. So you have to be really frugal, really James Click-esque with all the other moves that you make and be very savvy with the money that you spend. Because of the fact that number one issue in the offseason for you has yet to be resolved one way or the other, And so, therefore, I don't think they're going to go out and try and break the bank elsewhere, because it also sends a very clear message then that they're done with Correa and that, that there's only so much money to go around. So I don't think they're going to go that route either. But now you wonder if they are solely focused on, let's get to this Correa thing. Because, look, we're looking at in about, what, a matter of hours is when we could be facing, you know, and Jeff Passan and others indicated before the potential for a lockout and all the things that could happen to where baseball could go dark. Spending wise for a couple of months, if there's a lockout of any kind of length, that teams were going to go try and make a last ditch effort to try and get their guys. Well, as you mentioned, we've got, you know, New York spending money hand over fist, and they just did it again. The Rangers spending money, and you're going, for how many years? For who? For what? Okay, so you're wondering, are the Astros going to be in kind of a rush mode to get a Correa deal done before they get into this dark period? Or are they just going to let him play out going, hey, the more shortstops that fall off the board, the more teams that are throwing money around, the better a chance that maybe at the end of the day, there's a way we make this thing work.
Looking at the money that Correa is going to command and the Astros, in my opinion, unwillingness to go over the luxury tax, less than 1% chance Carlos Correa is a Houston Astro,
always been
in my
the Debbie
opinion.
Downer on that.
Debbie I've Downer, realism, whatever you want to call it.
The sources that I've talked to said that Jim Crane is still contemplating the home run move, really the home run move to try and save him. But I'm hopeful, but, and I'm being, I mean, I didn't actually try and do that purposely, but literally it would be a home run because it would be another guy like a Verlander, a guy he loves that he knows has so many intangibles to the money that could bring to the table in terms of jersey sales and popularity. And he's one of our guys homegrown that maybe Crane comes in as that X factor that I keep hoping might be a part of this. But if not, when you have Simeon off the board, when you have teams talking to these other shortstops, when you have the Tigers saying they're not going to spend $300 million on one player, look, whether it comes down to – I'd like it to be in the Astros' back pocket and have it to be their decision to make as opposed to the reaction of some other team is going to put you on the hot spot and go, can you or can't you? We're gonna play chicken.
Diaz or Pena, spring training battle to see who's the starting shortstop for the Houston Astros. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Texans lost yesterday. Nobody cares about that. What they care about is that Justin Reed was a healthy scratch. Why? What it all meant? We get comments from David Culley, comments from Tyrod Taylor, and maybe comments from a Justin Reed fan or friend. Whatever he is, that's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about MyBookie. We told you it's the only place to place wagers. It's MyBookie.ag, but there's always a time to make it even more fun by going to MyBookie.ag. Today is one of those days. It's Cyber Monday, as we all know, and the Cyber Monday deal, if you bet on tonight's Seattle-Washington game up to $100, you earn a free play for the same amount on next Monday night's game. Bet tonight, get a free play next week on Monday night, and it's that easy. MyBookie, the best place to bet on sports. Not only do they have lines on all the games, they got props on most of the games, live in-game betting to keep things interesting. Make the most uninteresting game with no attachment to it the most interesting game on the tube because you got money rolling. Bet with MyBookie.ag on your phone, laptop, or tablet. It's fun. It's easy. Your money is safe, and when you win, they pay. Don't forget their Cyber Monday deal. It's tonight. It's Seattle, and it's Washington. You bet up to $100, you earn a free play for the same amount on next Monday night's game. Bet tonight, get a free bet next week. How can you get better than that? Well, you can get all your bets done on MyBookie.ag, where you bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. Just bet with MyBookie.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
The Houston Texans, Justin Reed, is a healthy scratch today.
Anytime we have disciplinary reasons like that, it's always internal.
The Houston Texans have decided to let ego, to let emotion, to let feelings get in the way of fielding the best team possible.
Well, I mean, you know, we have rules, and you know, when the rules are broken, and, you know, we make decisions on those, we do those. It doesn't matter who it is.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome. We live in our dream.
other. Texans, Jets yesterday. Who cares about the result, right? It's more of a benefit losing the game. But Justin Reed, best defensive player on this team, kind of the upbeat guy, the energy of the defense. Randy McEvoy calling him the face of the franchise, which I don't think is a terrible take.
Right.
And David Culley benching him for having a little bit of a disagreement during a tape review session. Now, David Culley did say later that he also broke a team rule. But boy, when this is the storyline of this team, it's valuing culture versus winning. And the Texans, again, valuing the culture over the benefit of winning.
Which T-shirt are we making up first? Embrace the suck or shut up and tackle? Because it sounds like, from a Texans perspective, what they told Justin Reed was shut up and tackle. Don't talk in meetings. Don't talk back to coaches. Don't give us your true feelings when we ask you a question. Just shut up and do your job. Because as we were talking about early in the show, there is both two sides to a story. And I always believe that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. But based on what we've heard from the Texans, as opposed to what we've heard from Justin's camp, whether you believe what his quotes given to Mark Berman or what his friend Ryan Clark said about the situation where one of the sound bites was from in that song, you seem to believe that the Texans just basically asked the question of a player but didn't want him to respond, and that got him in hot water. That's a problem.
Here's David Culley yesterday responding. Like, it was a series of questions. This was after the game. The first series of questions he got wasn't even about the game. No one cares about the game. The Texans are a terrible team that are losing a bunch of games. They cared about the storyline. They cared about the lead. Justin Reed, benched, healthy scratch. Culley's response to the series of questions.
Disciplinary reason is a coach's decision, and, you know, we'll keep that internal. It was my decision, and it's internal.
A one-game thing, a one-week thing?
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Did this stem from a team meeting, a disagreement in a team meeting?
Let's keep that internal.
So a lot of no answers there from Culley. It's internal. They're keeping it in-house.
You know what that means, Jeremy? The index card got to the podium before Culley did, because at least he stayed on message. He didn't go give you his true thoughts and then have to correct it on Monday when Caserio and the PR department caught up with him and said, Dave, you weren't supposed to say that. This time, it's all going to stay internal.
Now, if he's breaking team rules and he's going a little bit further extreme than just like the normal cordial conversation between the two, I'm okay with benching Justin Reed on a team that's terrible and is going nowhere. I believe setting culture in year one is critical. To me, it's more critical in the college game than the NFL game. But you want to set the tone. You want to set the example of what your franchise is going to be. And look, Texans get a bad rap for being like Patriot South. They're trying to be Patriot South with culture and team ahead of player. So I'm okay disciplining players. I'm okay whenever you have a guy like Justin Reed that's a healthy scratch if it goes to that extreme. And that's the problem we don't really know. We don't know what all went down. But I'm okay with benching a player whenever he's breaking the culture or the rules, whenever you're a bad team. Like, you have a slightly better chance of winning the game when he's on the field, but who cares this season? You're not in the conversation for anything.
Would you be okay if you had said that the reason why Justin Reed was a healthy scratch was penalties and turnovers?
Sure.
That would have been that he got the wrong cue card. But instead, he got the cue card right, but it brings you more questions. Because to your point right now about Patriots South, well, but the Patriots South had Willie McGinnis. They had Tom Brady. They had veterans that understood and enforced the culture and were the face of the franchise. In this case, you're taking the face of the franchise. And again, Randy with a good analogy, and it makes you think, because from the jump when he said it, you're like, no. Well, actually, they've gotten rid of everybody else.
Yeah.
He's one of them. And then you send that message. So then you start asking yourself, well, what culture was there in the first place? If a guy that has been basically anointed as your franchise and one of the leaders of this team that's doing it in the community and doing it in the locker room and doing all these – look, Thursday he was doing Thanksgiving appearances and giving away, you know, turkeys and doing all these different things. And then what does he get Friday, where he said, you know, again, depending on what you believe in the stories you hear, he thought it was all water under the bridge. And he shows up and finds out, oh, by the way, after practice, you're not going to be a go on Sunday.
Here's Ryan Clark whenever he went on Twitter yesterday and posted a long video about the benching of Justin Reed. And to me, this is obvious that Justin Reed giving this information to Ryan Clark.
The Houston Texans' Justin Reed is a healthy scratch today. He started all 4 years for the Houston Texans. He's played free safety. He's played strong safety. He's a healthy scratch because of a disagreement. He's a healthy scratch because he answered a question honestly when asked by the coaching staff. Now, coaching staffs have disagreement with players all the time. They usually move on when it's not a fight, when it's not volatile. When it's amicable, They find a way to get to the solution for the problem, and they field the best team they possibly can. That's what winning organizations do. The Houston Texans have decided to let ego, to let emotion, to let feelings get in the way of fielding the best team possible. Justin Reed was a professional, and as the leader of the team, he answered a question that was asked of him. Now he won't suit up. This is one of the best players on the team, a player that sacrificed much for the Houston Texans. Now he's repaid by not getting his helmet because he was honest.
Thoughts on Ryan, which, where is Ryan Clark, by the way, filming this? And it sounded like he's reading it off a teleprompter.
No, he was outside somewhere. If you watch the video, the thing was, I felt like he and again, we all talked, the three of us talked about before the show. He obviously has a relationship with Justin Reed.
This was Justin Reed.
He's essentially delivering the message for Justin Reed if you didn't believe the quote from Mark Berman and you wanted to hear someone actually put it into words. When you hear what he had to say, it was basically like, I got to get this out as soon as possible on my social media from a man. So regardless of whether I'm shopping with the wife or I'm doing something outside of the house, I got to get this out immediately. And he used his phone and he got it out. He delivered the message. The thing to me, again, that we go back to, I believe everything that Ryan Clark said, and I believe that he delivered it. Now, we also believe that we can't just say, well, because it came from Ryan Clark, it came from Justin Reed, it must be truth. We want to hear the other side. But when we hear the other side of it and all the coach speak and all the you know, the bobbing and weaving that the Texans are doing, you would normally think that there's, and I said this earlier in the show, there would be some substance to it to where you would say, okay, they have a something or two, this was building, or this is like Bradley Roby. There were several things leading up to this. There weren't any indications, and they're not giving you anything that leads you to believe that he's a bad apple, or that this has been coming for a while, or that he really did something blatantly.
Should they, though? Should they do that if he is a bad apple internally?
I mean, you're past the trade deadline. You know, you're not trying to move the guy. The thing is I don't know how much thought went into this, like we said, which is, you just cut the cord on Justin Reed.
Sure.
Like, when he becomes, he's not going to be a Texan in the future, which if you had any aspirations of bringing him back, you should have thought about that before you did this.
I mean, if Reed broke a team rule and deserved a suspension, I'm totally okay with, one, suspending him for a game, and then, two, not throwing his name under the bus or throwing his name in mud, because you don't want to have that reputation around the league. You said, what about the team leaders? Well, Tyrod Taylor, one of the team leaders, he reacted to Justin Reed's benching after the game.
As a team, we support our coaches and our leadership decisions, and we continue to keep moving forward.
Sounds a little bit like a hostage victim there, huh?
Yeah, but also when his quote before that leading into it, though, was, you know, more on, it was also kind of on the Reed side of things, too, about we wanted him out there and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, he's still the starting quarterback of this team. He doesn't want them to change directions on him and go, hey, by the way, Davis Mills is the starting quarterback. We don't have to tell you why. We're going to keep that internal. But I think that, again, when you're talking about culture and you're on the way back up, right? The rebuild is in full force. You've gotten a real roster of players, and culture becomes so much more important. Because otherwise, all that I hear as a Texans fan watching this organization operate on a daily basis is a bunch of smoke and mirrors and BS with coaches speak. Because otherwise, if you want to believe their culture is a thing, well, your number one culture guy that's attached to the hip with Jack Easterby is Brandon Cooks. And Brandon Cooks went off the deep end on social media when Mark Ingram was traded. And then they said, well, they didn't want to trade him because he's a culture guy. Well, what kind of culture are we talking about here if it can go back and forth and Brandon Cooks can go off and spout off about the team on social media, which if you're a Patriot way, that's the worst thing you can do under Belichick.
He also backed off of those statements as soon as he was behind a microphone and behind a camera and basically said that he was still very much part of the organization. So, I mean, maybe there's more to what Reed did that we just are unaware of. David Culley asked today if this situation will be a distraction going forward.
Well, it's not a distraction anymore. We took care of it. And, you know, those things happen, you take care of them, and then you move on. And that's what we're doing in this situation.
There you go. Moving on. Let's take a call real quick. HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. So this culture thing is, to me, it's just a complete farce. There's no culture. Only culture is negative for the Texans. I have no idea what happened. I wasn't there, but I'm willing to believe anything that Justin Reed would have to say over the Texans. They have no cachet whatsoever. Perfect example is when they moved Jeff Driskel to tight end, when he really should have just been cut because he's terrible. He was actually terrible in college. He's been terrible in NFL. He's been terrible with Texans. This is a true story. I said to myself, I wonder what the first word of his Twitter profile is. I bet you it's Christian. And I promise you, I went to Twitter, looked up Jeff Driskel, and lo and behold, it's Christian. They're not operating by the rules that we think they are, which is how do we win football games. This Jack Easterby thing is some twisted something else going on over there, and it's showing in the results. So I don't know what Justin Reed did, but I would put my mortgage on it that it wasn't worth the suspension. It's probably something completely foolish, and that's just the way that the Texans operate.
Appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. They just don't care about winning this year.
Well, they shouldn't, and we said that,
absolutely
right?
Not.
But at the same time, this is one thing if you see Bradley Roby, a veteran Super Bowl champ who signed up for one thing and is getting something totally different, and whether you thought he finagled his way out or this, you know, he was just showing his displeasure in the fact that this isn't what he signed up for and this is not the culture that he wanted to be a part of. But he seemed like he was kind of a bad apple, and he was very opinionated in a negative way. Justin Reed seems like the exact opposite. Justin Reed seems like a guy that, you know what, it would take a lot to have him go against the franchise that drafted him in the third round when he was supposed to be a first-round pick and has supported him as much as he supported them along the way and has put his best foot forward as long as he's been in red, white, and blue. So this is why this is so surprising. This is why so many people, I think, are quick to side with Justin Reed.
Exactly. To me, it's what's happened in the past, and Justin Reed has been that energy guy. He's been the guy that's talkative behind the microphone. He's been one of your best defensive players. So, yes, I mean, people are willing to side with the guy that they like versus the team that right now they despise. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Some big games around the NFL yesterday. Who made a statement around the league? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jumbo formation. They were running in a big hole. Who needs a field goal? Fournette goes for the end zone, and he's in! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! His fourth of the day!
Leonard Fournette. Big day for the Tampa Bay Bucks. That on Fox as he led the Bucks over the Colts 38-31. Big victory for the Bucks, and they did it in come-from-behind fashion.
Yeah, it was given to them in a lot of ways. As good as Carson Wentz is one of those guys where I understand the pain of Eagles fans, because for all the good that he does, it's not necessarily a bad read and a bad throw, but he just finds ways to turn the ball over, to fumble it, not take care of it, do things that otherwise they were in control for three quarters of that game. And then they just decided to put it on a platter and said, here's the ball in our territory. Go get a quick score. And then, here, let me give it to you one more time so you have a chance to just jam it down our throat, run the clock out, and basically let the time run out with a win. The Colts had a chance to make a big statement there that they legitimately, with the way the AFC is in flux right now, that they could have said, we're part of that mix, and just kicked themselves in the grapes by stabbing themselves in the foot with bad play given to the Buccaneers. Buccaneers don't look great, but they should cherish that win on the road against, which could be a good football team. Texans fans, look out. Colts will come in and just completely go crazy on you this week.
Colts are looking better. That was a bittersweet game because there was parts of the game where I'm like, man, the Colts look solid. Like, maybe they can do a little bit of damage in the playoffs. Not AFC championship material, but getting to the playoffs and then maybe winning a game. They look like that for part of the game. Then another part of the game, they had tons of mistakes that you're referring to. They were up by 10 at the half. And their first two possessions, strip sack of Wentz after Wentz was Dylan in the first half. And in the very next possession, threw an interception. Carson Wentz afterwards saying, we blew it.
You know, you hate to walk in here in the locker room, you know, feeling good early on and then walking away with it with a loss. You know, it's a bad feeling the way we just kind of we let them back in it by turning it over, giving short fields in some of them. And, you know, they capitalized on it.
They didn't do Wentz any favors. Like, the play calling in the game, and look, I understand Tampa Bay's rush defense is very good, but whenever you have a 10-point lead in the second half, you have Jonathan Taylor, maybe the game's best running back right now, feed him a little bit more. Maybe not just commit to the running game and hand it to him every single play and go 3 yards in a cloud of dust, but Wentz in the game, 44 passes. Taylor had 16 carries, and it was a game that, for the majority of the game, they were leading.
Yeah, with Derrick Henry out, he's the best running back in football, and I'm not just saying that because he went to Wisconsin. The kid has made a name for himself, and week after week when we see the highlights, we go, this is a guy that understands how to pound the rock, pick his spots, and get results for you. This is like Bill O'Brien at Alabama. Like, why the hell are you going away from the kid, especially when Wentz has shown that he's fragile, both taking care of the football and making the right decisions? Just hand the ball off to 28 and get out of the way, and instead they couldn't get out of their own way. That was what was so frustrating for me watching that game.
Yeah, it was frustrating from a Colts point of view. Vita Vea, by the way, did you see him lose his front tooth? Yeah. He lost his helmet, got hit with the offensive lineman's helmet, lost his front tooth. Nah, no big deal. Stayed in the game.
True story.
It's like a hockey player.
My boy Keenan McCardell, when he was with the Bucks, and, you know, Ray Allen and I and Keenan McCardell are golf buddies in the summer. And Ray texted me and he goes, did you see your boy Keenan today? And I said, no, what happened? He goes, you got to go see the replay. Keenan doesn't wear a mouthpiece and took a direct shot under the face mask, fielding a punt. And it looked like, and I texted him after the game. I go, bro, how much dental work do you need? Well, evidently he said because he doesn't like wearing a mouthpiece and he chews gum, he somehow went to a dentist early on and had reinforced like his teeth and didn't have any damage because of it. I was like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. I mean, as much as it saved him from an injury, I'm like, I can't imagine what kind of dental work has to be done so that you don't lose a tooth if you were hit in the face with a face mask of a helmet. Ugh. Coming. Crazy.
Violent game. Meanwhile, in Cincinnati, not a good day for Big Ben.
37 seconds left in the half. Empty backfield for Ben Roethlisberger. Two deep safeties for Cincinnati. Big Ben catches the shotgun snap. Short drop, throws, and it is intercepted. Running it back to the house for the touchdown. Mike Hilton against his former team intercepts Ben Roethlisberger's pass and runs it into the end zone. Cincinnati is embarrassing Pittsburgh so far today.
Dan Hort on WLV with the call. Bengals now 7-4, Steelers 5-5-1. Your favorite color guy in the NFL.
Yeah.
Lapham? Dave Lapham?
Whatever his name is. But that was basically the final straw on Ben Roethlisberger. If you're a Steeler fan, that's embarrassing. That hurts, not only because of what the rivalry, if you want to call it that, the divisional matchups year after year have looked like between you and the Bengals, but the fact that afterwards Burrow was basically like, who, them? I mean, we basically, without saying, he's basically like, we own them, we beat them again, we have bigger fish to fry, we're worried more about playoffs and other things, and he's right. Look, I said, as much as I liked matching Burrow back up with Chase, that they needed more help on the offensive line, and until they shored that up, that they might be a year or two away. Mixon, regardless of the offensive line, has just run roughshod on any defense coming his way. Chase and Burrow have lived up to billing, and that team is ahead of schedule because of it. They've got the right skill position players, and they're playing great football right now. Kudos to the Bengals. That's a massive boost for them, and that's the last straw for the Steelers.
Looking like a playoff team. Big Ben was 38-58 through the two interceptions. Mixon, who you mentioned, career-high 165 yards in the victory. Maybe an under-the-radar team there in Cincinnati in the AFC. Critical game in the NFC side of things. Couple of teams that are fighting for that seventh spot in the NFC. Minnesota going to the Bay, facing the Niners. Niners come away with an 8-point victory, 34-26. Now 6-5. Vikings fall to 5-6. Third win in a row for San Francisco. Suddenly looking pretty good thanks to that running game. They ran for over 200 yards. Eli Mitchell over 130 yards. Debo ran for two touchdowns, but he got hurt and is expected to miss some time. Big loss there. But the 49ers suddenly looking pretty good thanks to a running game that's starting to come alive.
Well, and what I told you was, even a few weeks back, the worst nightmare for one of the top seeds in the NFC is, as a reward for a great regular season, you get a hungry, getting healthy Niners team with Kyle Shanahan and having some weapons to actually work with in the playoffs. That could be devastating for any team thinking they got an early round, easy one set up. Because the Niners are set up to be a team that could wreak havoc on the NFC if they just get in. Losing Samuel hurts, but Debo, whether you play him at wide receiver or at running back, you're looking at a guy that Cordell Patterson has basically set the mold for. He's the next coming of the Swiss Army knife, much like the Saints had their own version of it with Taysom Hill a couple years ago. The next coming in offensive schemes and minds like Shanahan is to have a guy like that on your roster. It's impressive. It's dangerous for other teams. But and then from a Vikings standpoint, Dalvin Cook, not only insult to the injury, the Vikings lose a game they had to have and then Dalvin Cook out with shoulder issues, dislocated shoulder. That could be the end of the season in terms of playoffs for the Vikings.
Yeah, maybe that was the final one for Minnesota, their last opportunity. Meanwhile, Jimmy Garoppolo, before the game, there was a report that he could be traded. He was asked about it afterwards.
Report right before the game that the 49ers intend to trade you this offseason, barring a Super Bowl run. Did you see that, and what's your reaction?
No, I didn't. I was worrying about the game, but I appreciate the heads up.
Just a recycling of old news, right? Like, this has been one of the stories ever since they drafted Trey Lance. Like, anybody with a brain knows that they're probably going to trade Jimmy Garoppolo during the offseason. Jimmy Garoppolo handles it well, though.
He does, but Jeremy, here's the thing, and I think you'd be in the same boat probably more so than me. If I knew that I had 100 and some million reasons why it didn't matter where I was playing next year or the year after, I wouldn't lose a whole lot of sleep because I know that the rest of my life, I'm set.
Yeah, when you're rich.
Yeah.
So no problem there. Kirk Cousins, when he dies, the cause of death might be Justin Jefferson, by the way. That relationship getting sour. Like, Justin Jefferson yesterday, it wasn't actually a bad thrown pass to him that he just couldn't quite get to. And he just, like, lit up Kirk Cousins, like, you know, the mannerisms. He was upset. You could see
he's starting to feel real comfortable in the fact that he's made it in this league.
And Adam Thielen caught a touchdown pass earlier in the game, and Jefferson, like, pouted to the sideline. Like, his teammate caught a touchdown pass in a big game, and you have Justin Jefferson pouting to the sideline. Monitor that situation. Might
bad look there. Bad look on Jefferson for sure. And actually, he's starting to get more like a prima donna wide receiver in the NFL, which is scary. The other thing that's scary, not only does Kirk Cousins scare you with the fact that he tries to throw it to the other team a lot, he lined up behind the guard.
Right guard, He's had a good year. He's had a good year. It's easy to bang on Kirk Cousins, but he's been pretty solid this season.
Easy because of all the money he's stolen over the years. He should be on an APB for the most wanted in terms of how much money he's stolen from the Redskins. I'm sorry, the Washington football team and the Vikings.
Find him. Find them. Yeah. Money in the fine jar. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Busy weekend of college football. We'll dive into it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'm gonna ask you about it. It's nonstop. I mean, it's every day.
Hold up, Gary. I'm not gonna be the next head coach at LSU.
Lincoln Riley,
used car salesman.
Didn't lie. Did not lie.
This is why you can't. This is why there was so much re-questioning of Jimbo Fisher. College football head coaches, like the used car salesman, you can't trust them. Because all you needed was a follow-up. But there was no freaking social media. I don't know. There was, for some reason, there was no inkling that he could go anywhere else.
There was no hint. There was no rumor. There was no story that he could go to USC. I mean, they kept
who
it quiet brilliantly.
That he had LNS. I mean, who knew that he had little nut syndrome and he didn't want anything to do with the SEC and just thought that the easiest way for him to get the payday and get away was to go to USC.
You buying that? You buying that as to be the reason?
He's terrified. You can tell me all you want. And now look, he's tailor-made the opportunity for himself because with the decommits he got and all the guys that he can come in right away, and he's taking his D coordinator with him, he's going to have the opportunity in a weak-ass conference as it is to make an impact quickly, make a big splash, be a hero, turn USC back on the uptick, have everybody talking, and then avoid what the gauntlet of the SEC. And the fact that his days on Easy Street taking the Big 12 to task is, again, completely flipped over. Oh, I wanted a new opportunity. This was so tough for me. I bet you Bob Stoops was ticked off.
Yeah. I mean, Stoops, you could say, left the Oklahoma job before he was ready to leave the job so they could keep Lincoln Riley. And then Riley kind of in the middle of the night heading to L.A. To me, it's one variable of it. It's much easier to win, in my opinion, at USC than what it's going to be at Oklahoma with that, especially the stacked West division. Like, if you want an SEC job and path of least resistance, stay out of the West because the West is loaded. USC's ready is a spot where you can go to win. I don't think there's as much pressure as at USC. Like, it's still a high-pressure job. It's still an elite job. But it's not the only show in town. You got the Lakers. You got the Dodgers. You have a bunch of attention that can be spent elsewhere. You don't have that in
Norman. But the other thing, too, Jeremy, is the expectations have changed so drastically that instead of SC always being considered a top 10 college football program, it's almost like, in passing, the loyalty is going to be there no matter what. Look, they were outdrawing the Chargers when they were playing in the Coliseum, and the Chargers were playing in a soccer stadium. The thing is there's not the whole – it doesn't take a whole lot to get the luster back on SC or have everybody pat him on the back and go, you're doing a great job. And he doesn't have to have the pressure of some of these other top programs like Michigan, like some of the other schools going, hey, if you don't get to a playoff, if you don't do the things you're expected to do when you get the contract and the money, we could cut you really quickly.
Look how long USC kept Clay Helton.
Yep.
Mediocre results at USC. You get to the playoff a couple of times, you're in that job forever. Meanwhile, LSU's firing a head coach that won a national championship 2 years ago. Florida's firing a head coach that's been to three straight New Year's Six games before this season. The pressure to win in the SEC is like the Premier League, where if you're not winning a national title, you're not getting to the New Year's Six game that year, you're going to be sacked. Whereas USC, I don't think you have the same pressure.
You're a coach that's coached Heisman Trophy winners that have been top picks in the NFL, that are producing at the NFL level. So you're going and you're recruiting in one of the best hotbeds in terms of the state of California and in Southern California. And you come in with that kind of swagger, with that resume, and you tell college kids, hey, I'm coming to SC. You're coming with me. I'm going to make you the next. And guess what? You don't have to get the hell beaten out of you in an SEC schedule. All we got to do is compete with Oregon and keep beating, you know, they couldn't even beat UCLA this year. Mm-hmm. And UCLA with Chip Kelly has been nothing like UCLA of the past. So if you can win that rivalry as opposed to Michigan finally beating Ohio State, if you just continue to beat UCLA and you compete with Oregon for the Pac-12, you are in the driver's seat and you're just going to get money hand over fist. And then because of the fact that your name brings the swagger of in a recruiting war and it's a beautiful campus in L.A., you're going to be in an easy street situation as opposed to trying to really where you had to claw and scratch every year to come out of the SEC or get one of those bids.
He also looks pretty Hollywood too, you know. Like I think he likes the life and the lavish of being in LA as opposed to Norman, which is a great city, Norman, Vegas. It's great, but not quite LA. Now he did no show a coach's show. He has a TV coach's show that he does, and the host of the coach's show said for like 3 or 4 hours that he was waiting, that he got a call saying that Lincoln Riley was going to be like 3 or 4 hours late, and then he just completely no-showed the coach's show. What's all that about?
Again, LNS. It's little nut syndrome. It's my paycheck is big, but I'm not. So the fact of the matter is, this isn't the only situation. I mean, there's situations that you might have to be worried about, too.
What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, we had a guest on today that maybe for all of the uplifting information he gave to make you feel good about a certain hand gesture that you make and a certain color that you wear daily, there might be problems in Happy Valley down there over there with your Cougs.
But Houston, to me, is a gold mine as a football team. You know, I coached and went to South Alabama down there in Mobile, another gold mine, and I'm just waiting to look up 5 to 7 years from now and see Houston being a legitimate problem. I'm just interested to see this Holgorsen situation with Oklahoma, if anything comes of that.
Huh, I see what you did there. Mm-hmm. Don't necessarily appreciate it on conference week either, by the way. Where are the Luke Fickle rumors? We don't need these rumors distracting the Cougs.
Can you get one of those little hats with that hand gesture?
Yeah, you can.
Those are cool. Did Dana create that?
I think he did.
I think he
did,
too.
The backstory behind it, but he was the first one wearing it.
I give him credit for that. I think that's a really cool hat. I just think that, you know, sometimes after, you know, a guy comes on and they're so honored to be a part of the In the Hive with the Bees, but they don't have to boost you up like that. I like the fact that he kind of had one last parting shot right between the grapes.
Houston is a sleeping giant, let's be honest. Now, he's not the only person that said that today. Michael Garfield actually tweeted this out earlier.
The high-tech Texan?
I guess. I think that is right, actually. I know it's right because I trust you.
Okay.
But he had this tweet out 4 hours ago, college football coaching carousel season. U of H's Dana Holgorsen took the Cougars to an 11-1 record in an AAC championship berth. His coach's radio show was just canceled for this week. Lincoln did a similar thing yesterday. Keep your eyes, ears on Cullen Boulevard this week. I don't know what kind of sources Michael Garfield
Anybody
has.
Anybody send you the memo?
Now, here's the true story behind that.
Ah, yeah!
So, and I host the Dana Holgorsen radio show, so I think I would be wise in talking about this as an expert of the situation. The Dana Holgorsen radio show does not go through the postseason. It goes to the end of the regular season. Last Tuesday's radio show was the last Dana Holgorsen radio show of the season.
Yeah, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't. Kevin Eschenfelder filled in for me because I was in Vegas.
It was kind of a thank you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was the last one. Now, there were preliminary discussions on adding another one because Houston was going to be in the conference championship game. But before those conversations even got, like, above ground, they were washed away because of the vigors of championship.
The bench had the same deal with Jimbo. It was only for the regular season. So they basically did their fond farewells regardless of where A&M plays in the postseason. So, yeah, that's an honest thing. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, inquiring minds want to know. But there's sources and then there's you. And so I would expect for you.
I am a source.
To tell the high-tech Texan to get with the program and get a little bit more with the technology of today.
Now, I mean, 11-1 head coach, I'm sure people are calling. Dana's always said he's not going anywhere. You know, I believe that.
He won't leave. Getting divorced from John Granato at this stage in their lives is not something that he's interested in. They are joined at the hip and married, and happily so. And this is their second go-round. I don't think that he's leaving for anyone, and Tillman loves him, and that's why he brought him here.
Billy Napier going to Florida. I think LSU screwed that up. You have a guy right down the road, yeah, Lafayette, who is 1-1-1. He's tied with all the high school coaches there. Like, everyone, and even we had Crane on earlier talking about the LSU job being an elite job. Everybody that I talk to, LSU is an elite job. You know what LSU jobs do? They get other people paid. Remember Tom Herman spurned LSU to go to Texas, got paid. James Franklin's gotten paid because he's been rumored to go to LSU. I'm blanking on. Mel Tucker was paid at Michigan State because he was rumored to go to LSU. Lincoln Riley rumored to go to LSU. He flies to L.A. in the middle of the night, takes the USC job. Like, are we so sure that LSU job's coveted by a lot of folks?
Well, that's a discussion that you've had with other hosts on other shows that can continue to be debated. Here's the thing that I'll say in terms of what Jake Crane was saying and what I brought up to him, which was when you're already on your fifth choice, you're not who you thought you were at LSU, right? And so you've got to get it right. And then the question that I have for you, again, being a guy with the sources you have, but some of the roles that you've played, is Tom Herman going to resurface at some point?
You know, I've been wondering that. Why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he?
I don't see why he wouldn't, right? Because you can say that it didn't work out well at Texas, but you could also say that he was close and he wasn't given a fair shot with enough years, with enough talent to do the things he wanted to do. But you can't argue with what he did at U of H. You can't argue when he was the OC at Ohio State, and he knows the college game. And again, Charlie Strong got another job right away. You would think that, I mean, he's in obscurity doing something with the Bears this year in the NFL. But this, it just, to me, it reeks of the fact that here's a guy that if you're a smart college program, you could do a lot worse than going and finding Tom Herman and saying, are you interested?
I completely agree. Now, maybe it's not a top job like LSU,
right?
But like a second tier Power 5
to
job.
To rebuild your image and your name and recreate it so that you can show you can still do it. Bill O'Brien's trying to do it at Alabama.
He won at Texas.
Yeah, the difference between Bill O'Brien and Tom Herman is he's won at multiple places where you believe in him. Sure, it was an unenviable situation at Penn State, but Bill almost gets too much credit for a team that didn't do as much as when you think back at it as people thought they did just to kind of dig out of that hole. When you look at Tom Herman at two different locations, you're like, this is a guy. He's not Lane Kiffin. He wants to set down his roots. The only reason why he left here, and you know this, is that was his dream job in Austin.
Yeah.
And that was the only job that he really wanted to have, and he wanted to have it for a lifetime. You took it away from him, but that doesn't take the coaching out of Tom Herman in the college game. I think he'd be ripe for a lot of different situations here.
I agree with that. And I know that he spurned a lot of Houston fans, but he still is like a top 40 coach in college football, in my opinion. LSU job open. Oklahoma job is open. Good time to be a college football coach because there's a surplus of jobs and a shortage of good coaches.
Open, right?
What?
Texas Tech still open?
No. They hired Joey McGuire.
Oh, that's right. That's
they
right.
hired Joey McGuire. But it'll be interesting
and
to
Miami's
see who gets
gonna
Oklahoma.
Be open.
Maybe. Did Rumored. Manny Diaz save the job? That's interesting. Lane Kiffin, the betting favorite to be the next LSU coach. Bill O'Brien's in the mix, too. I hope so bad Bill O'Brien is a head coach somewhere because I just want to make fun of him for an entire college football season. Oklahoma job, too. Like, if I'm Oklahoma, Luke Fickle, Matt Campbell. That's what I'm doing.
That's kind of where they're leaning right now. Kiffin right now, the leading candidate in Vegas to be the next coach at LSU. And again, if he does that again.
See, I heard LSU from like early on in the search that they wanted nothing to do with Lane Kiffin. But look where you are now.
But again,
look at all
like
the
if you're
names
at your
that came off the board.
And you need to save face and you're looking to do some kind of splashy move that from a recruiting standpoint and otherwise, and you can talk about, as we've talked about over and over again and debated with the NFL, guys in the NFL from LSU, with that alumni of guys that are constantly looking at the program, helping out, trying to make sure they stay relevant with Alabama and the SEC. You look at it and go, the luster's wearing off if you're at your fifth choice. So you better not take a guy. This is where it's harder for you to go and say, I'm going to take a guy that's a coordinator, that's an up-and-coming guy. Because now a guy right in your own state got a big job and you didn't even look at him. And if you believe what we were being told, that it was only because they didn't want to have the I told you so's. If you took our guy and that's what it took to be good, and that mattered to you as opposed to keeping a program at the upper echelon of one of the top schools in college football, that's on you. But you've got to now make a splash.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Perhaps some developments in the Deshaun Watson situation. We'll do some Monday afternoon quarterbacking next. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Rooted Rain Rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.